Everybody, welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan, and we are from ReverseThieves.com. If you would like to get in contact with us, you can email us at ReverseThieves@gmail.com, or you can talk to us on our brand spanking new Discord. Yay!
Yes, and somebody left a comment a couple of weeks ago that the Discord link on the website had like expired because I don't know what I'm doing, and I fixed it. So if you weren't able to get into the Discord before, you should be fine now, and I'll also put a link to it in the podcast description, so you don't even have to go to the main website if you're listening to this on like various other platforms, hopefully. So yeah, join us on Discord. We've got a number of people in there. Talk about different news that's coming up. We had a lot of discussion about Otakon, and yeah, so it's been really nice. And this month we're recording in separate locations again. I am on a work trip, family, whatever thing. So I am in a different part of the country for a little bit of time.
But what do you call it? I feel like we got so used to it during like peak pandemic that it feels like old times.
Yeah, although I did have a moment, I do not know why, where I was like, how do I record Al? And I was like, oh, I don't. Like, I don't have to do that part.
It's funny what we forget with such a short amount of time.
If I don't write it down in my journal or something, I will never remember like whatever it is that's happened. So this month on the podcast, we are just kind of doing sort of a roundup catch up of different things, and in between anime seasons, the fall season looks like it's going to be pretty intense. So, this is just kind of finishing up a few things, and obviously there was one very, very big release that, the whole internet, the whole world was watching that, of course, we will chime in about.
Tsukihime Remake, Kate. Wow,
That was
that's
it.
I can't believe that. What do you call it? Even you paid attention to that.
So let's just start there.
So yeah, I just wanted to, just 'cause like, I'm me. I just wanted to talk about it a little bit because I just found it interesting. So, plus, any way I could sneak on some Typhoon talk, I'll probably do so. Not that long ago, just a week or two ago, when we recorded this, the long-anticipated Tsukihime Remake came out, and so for those not in the know, or those who maybe only know Typhoon from Fate stuff, which has kind of become what it's mostly known for, the kind of visual novel that got them into, like, got them actually popular was Tsukihime Moon Princess. And then, they did a sequel to that, and then their follow-up game, Fate Stay Night, kind of became what they pretty much are known for today. And then like they're like, oh, they also did like that Garden of Sinners thing. And so I think like at least 8 years ago they announced they were gonna finally remake Tsukihime, and it was gonna and then Fate Grand Order came up and kept pushing it back. And it was like a joke that nobody thought it was gonna ever happen. And then last New Year's, they like finally set a date. It was like a big shocking thing. Like, everybody was like, oh, this New Year's announcement and that New Year's announcement. Oh, that's interesting. And then, like, when the Tsukihime theme music started, I know a lot of Type Moon fans were like, "What? No, it can't be, it can't be." And then it was. And so, I just find it very interesting. And I'm sure like there are plenty of examples, but I feel like there's a like a thing that only happens when you like remake or revisit something after a certain amount of time that like there's just this weird mix of preconceived notions and like expectations that leads to some very interesting fandom dynamics. And I noticed I haven't played the game, just I ordered it, but since it's all in Japanese and I don't read Japanese, I mostly just got it to like encourage sales and maybe hope that one day they come out with a English release. And I just really want the art book. But like because of that, I haven't rushed to ship it here. I have it like on a very slow shipping. So I have not played the game. I just more talking about like the interesting reaction. So before we go forward, so you're not totally lost and the audience is not totally lost, how much do you know about the Shin Megami Tensei fandom, Kate?
I don't even know what that is.
So you've played Persona, right?
I played Persona 3.
So Persona is actually a spin-off of a much larger franchise called Shin Megami Tensei. And what's interesting is that there's almost two fandoms that like overlap. There's like original Shin Megami fan Tensei fandom, and then there's Persona fandom. Because like Shin Megami Tensei was always kind of this like never unpopular but also never mainstream series. And they've had several spin-offs, like Devil Summoner, and there's like the detective one. They even like had like some like Pokemon style ones. So it's like a series that's no stranger to spin-off series. But then they did this one spin-off series called Persona, and one and two did well enough that, you know, they didn't break any molds, but they did well enough to get sequels. And then Persona 3, like, was like a super mainstream hit. And ever since that point, there's kind of been a weird divide where, like, there are fans of both series. There's more fans of just Persona. And then there are these very, like, bitter old school Shin Megami Tensei fandom members who, like, hate Persona and feel like it has, like, ruined the whole franchise and Persona fandom is a separate thing. And, like, as I don't know how much you would. How shocking this would be, but they consider like Persona games wussy, like baby town milquetoast versions of the proper true Shin Megami Tensei games. They're like, ah, it has all this dating sim stuff and like doesn't have the true epic scale of our proper games. And like, you know, you could argue that a lot of it feels like gatekeeping. I bring that all up because it's like my best example of the divide between general Type Moon fandom and then Fate fandom and Tsukihime fandom. Like, there are a lot of people that are fan of all of it, but like, since Fate was the one that went mainstream, there are a lot of old school Tsukihime fans who just kind of hate everything Fate and anything like past that point and just hold on for the true Tsukihime that like they feel is the only true part of Type Moon fandom. And like they like Tari no Kyokai, I think, most of the time, because it was pre Fate Stay Night. So it was kind of interesting to see a lot of that fandom pop out when Tsukihime Remake was initially announced, and then just kind of stick around for the many years just complaining the whole time about anything that came out afterwards, and just like waiting for Tsukihime Remake. And then there were all these like Fate, or even weirder, just Fate Grand Order fans who like heard about Tsukihime only from these Tsukihime fans that would just pop up to criticize modern Typhoon fandom and then to wax poetically about the old good old days of Tsukihime. So the game came out, and I was like, since I couldn't play it, I was just like scanning the internet and various Reddits or forums or like sites where I knew Typhoon people hang out to like see the reaction. And it was just very interesting to see like the various reactions of like different generations of Typhoon fandom to playing the game, which I'd be curious how it would even grow if they had if it had a proper English release. There were a bunch of people who were super happy because it's it's not only in like so many of these remakes, it's not just updated graphics, like whole major story elements have changed. And we were discussing, very briefly came up before the podcast, Final Fantasy VII Remake, how that got divided up into parts, and like major plot elements have changed. Tsukihime Remake is like that. The game is now split up into two halves, so we've only gotten the first half of it. And since the original game was like five paths, we got the first two paths in this first half. But that was a known quantity for a while, so most of like the complaining or speculation about that had already passed at that point. I'd just say, oddly surprisingly, most people had accepted that was the case, so I didn't see a lot of complaining about that. I kind of did expect a little more complaining about it. Like, it feels like most people got their complaining out about that when it was first announced. The old school fandom, there was a bunch of people who were just super happy. There were some people who had like measured criticism or like good critique. And then I feel like there were a bunch of people who like just hated new elements of it, or thought it was like too much tainted by like new Typhoon fandom, or didn't like character design changes, like felt it was too modern, not even just like too like new Typhoon fandom, like it had just like embraced too much of like the new fandom, and like what they loved about Tsuhime was the old way that the game, like how it represented like an older time. And then there were a bunch of like, conversely, there were a bunch of like fans who hadn't played the original who like thought it was like too old school and didn't like that parts of it, or felt like it was too stuck in the past and only liked like stuff that had came out today. So it was very interesting. I don't know, I was just fascinated by like what kind of the d different parts of the fandom liked and didn't like about the game. I'm generally saving my judgment for when I actually play through the whole thing. So whenever I do that, I'll probably talk about it on the podcast. 'Cause the fighting game that's based on Tsuhime is also like kind of always had this weird niche fandom. I'm sure you know one or two people have talked about it. We've talked about it. Melty Blood And it's finally getting an HD remaster that people would wanted for the longest time. And that's coming out next month. But that's getting a simultaneous English release. So I'll probably pick that up digitally and play it and review it here. And I'll save kind of thoughts and about that when I, because there are already lots of thoughts on that, even just with the previews, but I'll save that for another time. But yeah, I just wanted to talk about it just because I just found that like there have been plenty of like anime remakes that have like similar trajectories, but I just thought that was very interesting. I'm despite everything, I'm still very much looking forward to playing it, although that's not super surprising. I just waiting for either a legitimate release or a fan translation. I have read a few, like, there have been, like, a few key scenes that people have liked, and I've, read, I've seen, like, some quick and dirty translations of that, so I've sampled a little bit of it, but, I'm waiting for a full release. But that's Al's Type Moon talk for the podcast.
That's Al's Type Moon Corner. So, there were a lot of shows that we finished, recently that we haven't gotten a chance to really talk about, or, just because of the kind of the schedule of the podcast and, what's been going on. But I did want to be able to take a little time to talk about Megalobox Season 2, especially because we didn't talk really very much about it because it was a sequel.
Also, like, once again, there are a few. We're not going to talk about all the shows we finished recently, because at some point I have to talk about, since I just finished the last episode not that long ago, I have to talk about Battle Athletes Victory Restart, because, man, that show tries some stuff.
Did you finish Wonder Egg Priority?
No. We could probably talk about both of the shows in the same podcast.
I have some feelings. Anyway, okay, sorry. Back to Megalobox. So I did want to be able to call this out specifically because I did think it was really, really good. And the ending especially, I really loved. And I just wanted to round back to some of my concerns at the beginning of the season because I think we did briefly touch on it being back when we talked about new shows. One of the things I had said was I do always have like kind of a, I don't know, negative reaction isn't quite the right word, but like, okay, we had an ending for the first season. Now let us make everybody's lives super, super terrible in order to facilitate a sequel. Like why do we want to do that to characters, necessarily? But I did think that, or that's what I was kind of concerned about because Joe is having a really hard time at the beginning of this season, and it is a really tough season, and I think it is characters are going through a lot in this season, but I do think that it ultimately really, I thought it came together really well, and sort of the what had gone on and why it had happened and what it sort of meant for everybody and like how grief and death affect different people. And I think that that was all there, and I thought that it was actually explored really well.
So, two things. There's a really great video by Sarcastic Productions about sequels that brings up a lot of what you mentioned of like the pitfalls of doing sequels and like what you mentioned of like having to like when the story ends neatly having to like totally destroy the characters' lives to make a sequel and they like. The lady who does that podcast that's a like a interesting like the benefits and pitfalls of it and as she mentioned it's very easy to screw up and feel like oh well that was just pointlessly mean for very little payoff. Because you were searching for a term, and I was trying to think while you were talking. Do you feel it makes you feel very guarded? Like, you feel like on guard when you see something like that? Like, you're almost like ready for it to disappoint when you see something like that?
I guess I'm not sure I'm ready to be disappointed. I'm not sure if disappointed is the right word, but like it's like do I want to see characters in pain just to facilitate a story? Like to facilitate a sequel. So it's like and I like I said like I don't know if I'm thinking about disappointment or just that like it's not worth it. Like whatever kind of what you said Al, that like the payoff is not good enough, like it's not a good enough reason to do this to the characters or to their lives. But in this case, or like, so that's what I kind of questioned when I went into it. And then once I got out of it, I was like blown away. Like I loved the ending of this season so much. Like more than the first season. I mean, it was like I don't obviously I'm not going to give spoilers for anybody who hasn't, finished the series yet. Or if you've never watched Megalobox, like I definitely recommend it. The first season was great and I actually think the second season ended up being even more amazing. Not only does the beginning has a lot about grief and responsibility and kind of how we deal with those things. And then the end and kind of where the plot goes in the end is that we get a lot about sort of like using people's bodies in sports and like who profits from that and technology and like the sort of medical community versus like military community and like the technologies that can be used, like differently in different places. Like there's like just a lot about like ethical decisions in the second half. And I feel like Joe is able to get to a really, really good place by the end of this season. In even a better place than he was at the end of the first season. And so that's what makes it, I think, worth it is because like that's what I mean is like I felt like he got to some place important at the end of the first season. So like what we're and that is broken before like once we start season two, that like has all been broken. And it's like, well, why did we do that? And it's like, oh, well, these are the things that happened that caused that. And then now we can all get to eat like an even further place along in our journey by the end. So that like felt good.
I haven't finished it, but it does feel like, from what you've mentioned, I think it helps that it feels like they had a story they wanted to tell and themes that they wanted to explore, as opposed to just make more story, which I think then can be very, I think facilitates the story being stronger. As opposed to just being like pain-filled bed service in a way.
Exactly. And but I was like sort of fearful,
No.
of that happening. The other improvement I would say of season two versus season one is that season two has way more cool ladies, like cool ladies all around, cool business ladies, cool science ladies, just cool ladies who are cool to each other and actually friends and supportive of each other and just like excellent all around. So I was like yeah, like I think this is just it's really I think as far though as the tragedy of the season, like I do think that that is really tough. Like the emotionally, I think this season is really, really tough, but it gets to a really good place. So,
Yeah, because I feel like In a way, Joe had almost so little to lose in the first season that, like, if he had failed, like, it would have been sad, but, like, at least he would have, like, gone the distance in a way. Like, so it feels like, yeah, in this one, he had so much more to. He actually ha now had things to lose, so, like, when he, like, bottoms out at the beginning of this first season, you actually feel like, or if like this had ended in complete tragedy, like it would have felt like, what do you call it, like there was actually like serious sadness, and like just the stakes feel very different.
Yeah, and I just think it's really, really satisfying. I found it really, really good. And I do think for anybody who hasn't seen Megalobox at all, I do think that it's such an interesting series because especially the second season, I think you could say this also about the first one, but the second season, especially like the first half of it or whatever, it feels like it could be a Western TV show. It like a live action Western TV show. Like it's just very interesting. I think that sort of the just sort of the characters and the character dynamics, not that those things can't be present in anime, they can for sure. Like they are, it's in this show. But it just has sort of a mature vibe in a way that I don't think we f see as frequently. So I do really appreciate that about the show too.
I do feel that's an interesting sentiment, since, you know, Natasha No Joe, which it's based on, is such a, like, Japanese, like, show, and, like, such a, like, classical Japanese property. It's not like it was, like a Cowboy Bebop or like a Trigun or something that just had like this very either intentional or accidental Western appeal since the beginning. And like this was something that was like almost quintessentially Japanese. I mean, like I know the because there was a Megalobox panel, and I'm pretty sure you already knew this, but like there was like a funeral in Japan for the death of one of the boxers when he died in the manga, like a public funeral for him. So, like, you know, it wasn't like this was some. Oh, and Westerners like it too. So, like, Westerners like the original too. So, you know, we'll up the Western appeal in this, you know, this remake. Yeah, I just find it interesting that you would say that. And I would agree with it. I also just don't feel like it's one of those things that, like, the Japanese audience would be like, oh no, this is, you know, strayed too far from the series that we originally loved. Although I can't say that for sure.
And I don't really know because I've never really seen Ashita no Joe. I mean, I know like things about it, but I've never really watched it. So like I have no real sense of, you know, how different or not, or how this follows in its footsteps or not. You know, I think that should also for our audience, like you don't need to know anything about you know, any of that history to enjoy this series. It totally stands on its own. Might pick up an Easter egg here or there, but otherwise, you know.
There's like one meme that's the most famous from it, which is the end of the series. I feel like at this point, that's what most people know it for. And maybe if you're like well informed, you might know that that's where the cross counter comes from. And that's about it.
So you think you'll finish it?
Oh yeah, I'm waiting on my roommate. That's otherwise I would have probably finished it already. So yeah, it's just waiting for our schedules to line up, so we can finish that off. But it isn't a lack of interest. It's a lack of it's me watching it with somebody else. more than anything else that has delayed me.
Well, I look forward to talking more about it after you've seen it. Okay, so the other movie that came out recently, nope, it's not that one yet. It's not time to talk about it yet. Is the first Princess Principal movie, first of six, I believe.
Was it seven? I don't. It
It
was some large number.
was a lot. Although this first movie, and maybe this is indicative of all the movies, was really only it was only like about an hour, so it wasn't like, oh, there's going to be a half dozen 2 hour movies. It was more like it felt to me like just like a double episode, like a really long case episode.
Yeah, it felt like a two-parter kind of episode.
Yeah. And so I think the next one, I feel like it comes out in the like January or February, I think. And this was a movie that was, I believe it was delayed a bit due to COVID. As I think it was supposed to be out a little bit sooner. But luckily, it's streaming on HIDIVE for anybody who has watched the original series, and this is not a recap movie or anything, so it really expects you to remember what has happened, and because there's some big reveals at the end of that season that are important to what's happening in the movie, so.
And they're just considered matter of fact in this movie.
And they're also not like so clear that you would pick up on it easily. You know what I mean? Like it's
Yeah.
not like I feel like you would be like, wait, what? Like I feel like you wouldn't totally get it. So, but yeah, obviously if we're watching the movies, we recommend the original TV series. I don't remember if we talked about it on the podcast way back when.
I think I might have talked about it. But I like. No, I remember we had a conversation because we were talking about like the portrayal of the split Britain and like the politics of that. I distinctly remember that. Like, I don't remember our full conversation. I just distinctly remember having at least some discussion of that. I think it might have even been that I discussed finishing it, and then you discussed it again when you finished it. Because we watched it like completely separated, with at least like a year and a half in between.
Yeah, see, it's too long ago that I can't remember what we have said, but in any case, these are this the series is just it's like a group of girls who are spies. There's a divided like Al mentioned, sort of a divided England, and it's very like adventure romp. It's not real like deep. It's not real, like very, very serious or anything. Although it does have serious moments, but it's just like I think a lot of fun with really good characters and spy stuff. So.
I know you mentioned that, like, it is worth noting that while this was somewhat of a one-off adventure, there were a lot of seeds to a bigger storyline because we like see some major players from basically the other sides, if you kind of consider like. Because it definitely, the show is at points kind of channeling like a East-West Germany feel to the divided England, although it also is kind of set in a steampunk England. And so, if our group is with the West German equivalent of the country, then we get to see a little more of the East German side, and they kind of like bounce off our crew kind of, each side kind of like trying to determine how much the other side knows. And if they know that, what do you call it? They realize that the other side realizes,
You bring up a really good point, Al, that I did sort of make this sound like this was like a one-off adventure, like a non-canonical movie, but it's just not, no, that is not the case. This is a, as you said, s plants the seeds for probably movies that are going to be more complex and maybe even longer movies to really flesh out the story. In addition to what you were saying about we get to see diff a little bit more of the other side in this movie, we also are dealing specifically with a double agent. So that also gives us some, interesting perspectives on like, I feel like this movie, for as short as it was pretty complicated for like who was who and doing what and where. Like, I do think that it was had a lot of not quite knowing the lo like the goals and the loyalties of what was happening.
Yeah, and there's like a possible third faction that makes an appearance and at the very end to kind of undo some of the wrap up, as it were. So that's obviously also something that's going to play a part in other movies.
Yeah, and I was also, I mean, I think this came up a bit in the TV show, but I there's also a sense that I got from this movie, maybe even more than that, what that, the princess group is on Team Princess Group. Like it's they work for somebody, but they don't also 100% agree. Like we don't fully know everything that that group is doing, and neither does the princess group, and they don't necessarily. I feel like you, I don't know. Am I, do you get that sense too, Al? That like.
Like, 'cause when it starts off, it's like, okay, the basically the side they're against are like the super colonial British side. So they're like, boo, the bad guys. So the guys who must oppose them are, yay, the good guys. And the series kind of lets you believe that. But as the series goes on, you're like, oh, you guys are just the opposition to the old imperialists. And not even though you're like, oh, boo, we don't like the old guard imperialists. You guys, if you guys like reunify the country, might not actually be any better. It'll be like, now that we're in charge, we're the, what do you call it? And we have this crazy anti-grav technology. We're the new imperialists. Remember all that talk we had about how imperialism was bad? Yeah, forget about that. It was. Those imperialists are bad. We're going to be the new cool imperialists.
Yeah, so I feel like we're really on Team Princess. That's where we are. And we, I think in this movie in particular, really get a sense of like how precarious that position sort of is. And I think that will only accelerate into the next films.
Yeah, it was also, that just reminded me of like how that one guy who was like super sleazy is still like, they even mentioned like, wow, you're still around. And he's like, yeah, I pulled some strings in, yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was, I thought it was very enjoyable. Was glad to have everybody back. I don't think this is a huge spoiler, but like, love a book cipher. So like, I like picked up on that pretty quickly. I do have some. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but I do have a question that I definitely am going to ask Al after we talk about the after the podcast, because like there was something I didn't understand. But otherwise, yeah, I thought it was, just enjoyable to have the series back, and I'm looking forward to, the next movie.
Yeah, I will say that, like, my only major criticism, and it's just because it was more two episodes than anything else. It was like there did seem to be like some major characters who barely got any screen time in this. Like, definitely like the driver girl, like other than driving, barely did anything. And then
Don't think I didn't notice because Dorothy is my favorite. And she did not play a large role in this one.
and like the princess's retainer did not do anything. She was basically just like, I guess I'm still here. But I mean, that's that, if it was like a TV series, I don't think it would have been anywhere near as noticeable if it was just two episodes of a TV series. But when a movie does it, it does. But you kind of have to think about it more as like OVAs than like proper movies.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I think we've talked before about movies as the new OVA. But I would like to take this moment to say, if you haven't checked out Princess Principal, it's really fun. I believe it's only 12 episodes, so you can get through the series real fast and check out the movie. So it's like a fun distraction, I think. So
Seconded.
okay, it's time. It's time to talk about the thing that took over the internet. We, along with everyone else in the universe, watched Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.0 thrice upon a time, as soon as it, dropped, and or as I call it, like Ava the fourth movie, the final movie. I can't be saying this entire long name all over the time. So at the end of the podcast, we are going to do just a little spoiler section, just so we can talk about some really specific things. But we will talk about our general feelings first. So many people have said so many things about Ava on the internet. Like, what can we add? I think it's really just about adding our personal two cents, because so much has been said already. I don't need to review the film. I do not need to tell you what happened in it or whatever. This has been taken care of.
You can throw a stone and find another podcast that will do that.
Yeah, I think it's just mostly, just like a personal, like the personal journey, for each of us in regards to this franchise. So I would say the first thing I would like to say is that I am like incredibly amazed that this franchise was able to get to this point and have what I feel was a very good and satisfying ending, and not a lot of, I don't think you could say that about a lot of franchises that have had the popularity and longevity of this show, and especially like the setbacks that this creator has faced over the 25 years of Ava. So like I just have to say like congratulations, because you pulled off a miracle.
I just imagine a bunch of Kates surrounding Hideki Anno. Congratulations,
Yes,
congratulations.
omodetto, like you deserve it, like you really, you made it.
I would like to say something before we begin, which is, I am in a certain level impressed that we are talking about this, because in general, if it has not come up before, I will mention it now that Kate has been horrifically horrified to ever discuss Ava on this podcast ever, unless it's like just like slam some shitty Ava spin-off manga that she had the unfortunate to read, or like, I guess I like read this Evangelion Detective Club manga, and it was so garbagey that I feel like I could talk about it on this podcast and not worry about it. Because yeah, I feel like I think I've brought up like discussing like various Ava things on the podcast before, and Kate's usually like, "Yeah, but why don't we not do that?"
The Al, have you heard that the internet exists and like and people on it have an opinion about Evangelion? That is a really good point. I do tend to avoid. Well, I would say though that not I'm not gonna speak for you, Al, but like I also feel like you are not exactly like the biggest fan of the franchise. So like I also feel like like we don't need to talk. We don't have to talk about Ava. Everyone will talk about Ava, but I feel like now we got to talk about it.
No, that's fair. I feel like it always feels like, but what's your opinion? It's like the closest that anime has to water cooler talk show.
Yeah, so I think I'll just begin a little bit where a lot of people have some very, very personal connections to the Ava series in general. And everybody has their own kind of journey with it. And one of the things that I find really unique that will never, like, from this point on can never happen again, which like I don't know, is pretty interesting to me anyway, to my personal view of the series, is that when I saw it, I was 14, so I was like the age of the characters in the series, and that was when it was new to America. So like 97, it came out like late 97, started coming out in the US on VHS. And into 98, and so like I saw it before you could go on the internet and learn about it, or like before everyone had an opinion about it, you know, like I just feel like you can't have that experience basically now. Like there's just like you just like is there a way to watch Evangelion? I guess there is, maybe if you like don't really know anything about anime and like you just happen to watch it. Maybe, but like it's just so hard to like not have know what it is in some way through like osmosis or like seeing things or whatever. So like my experience of it was just very fresh. And then just like my age at the time of it just feels significant to me now because here I am 25 years later, not quite 25 years later, but seeing the end of it at a very, very different age. So like I am so different from when I saw the beginning of the series and like seeing the end now. I don't know. It just like I brought a lot of like emotion to me that I didn't necessarily expect, kind of having that journey.
Yeah, I wonder how much I have a different opinion just because I only saw Ava when I was in my mid-20s, which is a very different time in your life.
And I, you know, we all are, right? Like it was 20 plus years ago. So like we're all very different from if you saw it when it was new to America, like you've lived a lot of life since then. And so like who I was when I was 14, like I hope I am not when I am now. Like I hope I am not that person now. And like, yeah, I don't know. Like, so it feels to me just like really, really something about that is really special, and that like you will know, no one will again have that experience of the franchise, because it's not as if you're gonna, even if somebody just is now watching the TV series, right? They're not gonna wait 20 plus years to watch the rebuilt movies. They're not gonna be like, well, now I have to wait until my entire life is different to like experience this other part of the franchise.
I'd be impressed if someone did that.
I mean, it sounds like an interesting experiment. Not to get too like existential about it, but it is a series that's pretty, you know, about your internal feelings and communication and all that. But like, who who Shinji was and who Hideki Anno was when he made it at the beginning is also very, very different to like who they are now and like by the end of this movie. So like it all just feels like very just like this incredible journey that we've all been on.
Plus, I think it's worth mentioning because it'll come up later on. It's like very well known that, like, Hideki Anno, for better and for worse, both for the series and himself, has poured a lot into this series and, like, almost used this series as a tool and, weapon of a tool of self-examination and a weapon of self-harm. And various iterations of it have highly reflected that and will probably come in a lot with the discussion of this last movie. And I feel like a lot of people have had in many ways the same. I've at least met several people who have had the same reaction to the series, and in various levels of both. It's one of those series where unless you're like, when I analyze and look at or like and take in a piece of medium, I totally divorce, I am 1000% death of the author and like do not look at the original creator in the least. Unless you are that person, I feel like Hideki Anno is almost impossible to totally separate from Eva. And it's, well, any iteration that he's worked on, once again, some of the, variable quality spin-offs are a very different matter. But any main core Eva, you are, if you're looking at Eva, you're also kind of looking at Hideki Anno to a certain degree.
I think that that's absolutely true. You might not know it, right? Like you might not realize it unless you dig, deeper, but absolutely. Like the whole just the concept of not like of characters just not being able to communicate, like and not being able to like emotionally connect and like the difficulty or ease by which they want to solve that and like like or like comparing different endings of different things, right? We have the TV series ending, we have the movies, which I refuse to acknowledge or ever watch ever again, like the not these movies, not the rebuild movies, but the like
End of
Death of
Evangelion.
Rebirth. Yeah, like no. And then the rebuild movies and how they all like I was thinking a lot about because I'm sure there's a lot of what should you watch? Do you watch everything? Do you watch it in this order? Do you just watch the movies? Like what these rebuild movies, like what now that there are it's kind of all out there, like what is, is there some way you're supposed to watch it or like it should you only watch one or whatever? And I think, I was the way I was kind of describing the rebuild movies is like for me is sort of the Shinji I always wanted. Like that's the rebuild movies. It's not a Shinji who doesn't have flaws or who doesn't have setbacks or who doesn't have doubts, but he's able to, like, we're able to see him move forward. And I think that's like the Shinji I always wanted. But I also, which is great, and like, I would recommend the rebuild movies, for that reason. But I do think, like, Well, could we really have ever had this Shinji without the other versions of Shinji? And like, I think that the movies, the rebuild movies themselves, I think kind of posit that question a little bit of like, do you have to experience certain things? Do you have to go through things to like get somewhere? And like, how do you overcome those things? And I don't know. Like, I was just thinking a lot about, like, oh, well, I know that Anno himself, again, Al, like you said, can't really fully divorce him from it. But it's like, I don't think we get this ending without all of the rest of it. Because, like, I just don't think he wasn't there. Like, he wasn't ready for that. Even though I do like the TV series ending, even though it's very, very abstract, it's still a positive ending. Like, it's. It's still a hopeful ending. That's why I have such a problem with the end of Eva movies, because they go like in the opposite direction. But again, that sort of like reflects what he was going through, so.
I mean, it's infamous for like how many people like. I mean, there's that scene in End of Evangelion where they just flash a bunch of images at the screen, and like three or four of them are just death threats that he received from fans over his original ending to the TV series. And in many ways, I mean, this has been postulated by countless people. I'm hardly the first person to bring this up, but like, how many people have speculated that like the end of Eva movies is, all right, here's the big budget thing that I couldn't do, but also fuck you all, you guys who hated the ending of the TV series. Here's everything you wanted in the worst way possible, and screw you and your complaints. Anno out.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously I agree with that. But the thing is, right, that like it's also, but it didn't satisfy him. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't like it's like revenge in the worst way, because he's like, oh, I'll get you, like I'll get you back for like treating me like crap, which like totally fair, like to experience something, especially something that he felt like so personally connected to, and then have people react that way, like totally get his re reaction. But then I don't think it didn't make him feel better. You know what I mean? Like I don't think that it ultimately like left him feeling good. And so I think it's so wonderful that he was able to kind of return after so long to the series and like do something with it that I think he can be satisfied with, like he can feel good about. Because I will say that, like, when I initially saw the TV series ending, like I was like, what is going on? Like, I don't understand, because it's so abstract, and it's so unexpected. And I think we're all certainly, I mean, even if you got that ending now, I think you would be like, whoa, what's going on? Like, I think it's just non-traditional, and like we just all aren't really expecting that. And I think that, like, I think my own reaction w wasn't that, I mean, it wasn't, certainly wasn't death threats and like you should die for like, right, making this ending. But I think to say that I, always understood it, especially at the age in which I saw it, like I can't say that that would be true. I have not watched Eva in a really long time. I saw it many times, but I have not seen it in a really long time. And after watching this fourth movie, I kind of want to see it again, after so long, just because like I can acknowledge about myself that, like, believe me, as a 14-year-old, I could never like understand Shinji as who I was when I was 14. Like I could never have a level of acceptance for that character that like I think that I could like understand him better now, as an adult, but like just like couldn't understand him necessarily. Like wasn't emotionally there. So I do understand people react, some of the reaction to like how this the story ends, because there's not a lot of like plot answers. And I do think that it's just not it, but it's like, oh, we all didn't realize that like that's not the most important part, right? Like that's not the point. Do you feel like Al, maybe there's, I feel like there's not really a lot of plot answers in the fourth movie either, but like I just didn't care.
I think at this point, the way I'm trying to put it into words, here it is. At the end, boy, does that shit get some fucking anime, like just people shouting out terms, and part of it is like, I think I'm like the only one in this room who gets some of the things they're saying, because they're like weird. Like things based on like Kabbalah and occult stuff, but also I don't fully get it because they're all Hideki Anno's weird versions of those things. So I like have more than other people in the room because I know just from my own weird like RPG and like interest in like world religions some of this stuff, but also I don't fully know all of it. Because none of this is like how it won. Most of the terms and stuff, like the Door of Didak and all that, have different interpretations of like which sect you go to, or like who you're asking, or which mystical tradition you're looking at. But also, none of them are Hideki Anno's weird take on any of them. So yeah, that didn't help. But I think at this point, like, Hideki Anno has enough clout that he realizes he can get away with stuff like that, and people will, like, look for the, like, ignore the notes and listen to the song. Or ignore the individual notes and listen to the song. And like, he's got enough cred, and the series has enough cred that he knows enough people will do that. That he, he's like, all right. Plus, there are some pretty, the, I don't want to go into too spoilery, but like the one scene of animation deconstruction and reconstruction that we've talked about so much that, I mean, pretty much, if you just have a basic ability to read into symbolism, I think sums up a ton of like, here's my fucking thesis statement, son.
Well, me being, a plebeian and not always great at like interpreting themes, that was like one of my favorite parts. Maybe because I got it. I was like, I get this. I can follow that. Also, it was just visually very, very, very cool, and it like mimics some things that have happened in, the other movies, but like I just felt like this was more satisfying. And I feel like that's where I am with this movie, is that I just found it incredibly, incredibly satisfying, and I really wasn't expecting that, because the third movie I had a lot of questions about. And it was, I think that now that movie fits in, like it fits together, but like initially when I saw the third movie, I was sort of like, I don't know how I wasn't crazy about it. And so I think I didn't have a lot of expectation necessarily going into this last movie, or I was kind of coming off of that movie and like, okay, well, I don't know. I'm like, could go either way. And so I just felt so satisfied about like all the characters' journeys, kind of the responsibility taken in this final movie. I loved this ending. This was like emotionally, I think as good as it gets.
Very much worth noting that the first movie was very popular. People like it generally followed the original arc of the TV series up until near the end, where there started to be some divergence, and people were like, "Oh, I liked what the changes were." And then the second movie did that even more, and like right off the bat said like things are different, and people loved that movie, I think even more than the first one. And then that third movie came out, and boy, did the praise not continue. I mean, there were some people who really liked that movie, but in general, I feel like there were a lot of people who had your reaction of like, I don't hate it, but I'm definitely not sure where this is going anymore, and I'm not sure if I still like it. And then there were a bunch of people who were like, all right, Otto's a hack. He clearly doesn't know what he's doing anymore. This movie was garbage. I mean, infamously, one of the reasons this movie was delayed so long is he just lost like so much confidence after seeing the reaction to the third movie. And I think he said in interviews multiple times that it was only like the success and like him getting his confidence back after like the near universal praise of Shin Godzilla that he was like had the mental fortitude to come back and do the last movie. And like he was like, I was only like, I like realized that like in the headspace that I was after the third movie, I just couldn't do the fourth movie. Like nothing good would have come out of it. And it was like only after like I like felt like, oh, I can movie again. I can like direct again and like feel like I can produce a good product. Was I able to, you know, after Shin Godzilla, was I able to go back and properly do the fourth movie?
I don't know if he said it or people have just interpreted it, but also the fourth movie has some of that in the beginning of it, like sort of Shinji's going through this really difficult period of depression at the beginning of the fourth film, and then like how he weathers that and like how people react to it and you know him eventually getting to a different place with that is like also again like you were saying Al that like a lot of this stuff follows Anno's own journey but like that's him you know kind of like post third movie you could sort of I think interpret him and Shinji like going through this journey together, and then like how are they able to sort of eventually come to terms with their own internal struggles and like and then you know getting to like the other side of that. So like it's that journey of like having that moment of like Shin Godzilla and like support, getting support for yourself and then like getting out of it is like also at the beginning of this movie. And like I was thinking about what you said about how like he was supposed to make this movie, you know, pretty quickly after the third one. And like what would that movie have even been now? Like what, you know, like what there must be like a script or something, you know, like what would that movie like how different would this movie be? It's just a kind of wild to think about what whatever that would have been.
But like the old Saturday Night Live skits coffee table, I'll just put out the topic and then we can move on. Asuka, actually a stand-in for the Evangelion fandom. Because definitely in the spoiler section, I feel like one or two characters are definitely stand-ins for certain things or people. And like just hearing you say that. And just thinking about the movie, I'm like,
That is very interesting. I like where that might be going, or like that interpretation. I'm very curious about that.
oh, one more thing before we get into some more thoughts that will probably come up in the spoiler section, but the number of people who have mentioned how much this movie is a dagger into the certain sections of Evangelion shipping and shipping wars, I think cannot. Man, there were some salties or some major discussions about that.
There just seems to be nothing on the internet more fierce than a shipping war. Like it's, especially seemingly especially for series where that's not the point at all. I personally don't really have one, so like I'm good.
Yeah, I never really had a horse in that race.
I mean, except for the right answer, which is Karu, obviously.
There were several. There wasn't just like the two girl answers, but I feel like, yeah, there were some large scale shipping wars over the course of Eva history, and shots were fired at a lot of those sides by this movie. I had to bring it up in the non-dis just because like a lot of like reviews and discussions of this series of this last movie, I feel like almost all of them brought that up.
Well, Al, before we get to the spoiler section, because it sounds like we're we kind of got a lot that we want to get into there. I mean, what is your general feeling about the kind of the finale?
I really think that I remember, and considering the media landscape we live in, a lot of people were really worried about these movies when they first came out. And like I said, the first two movies gave a lot of people like, man, I don't know what we're worried about. And then the third movie shook a lot of people in their confidence in that. But I feel like personally, and just from what I've seen on the internet, like this feels like one of those things. I feel rather confident in saying this is one of those things that will be on a list of like sequels or remakes that were actually good or actually were worth something or actually, had something to say and were worthwhile. I feel like you could theoretically watch these on their own and not get, you would get something out of it and it would still be enjoyable. But I feel like as like a almost end cap to Anno's Eva, because like we all joked and it'll probably be true, they'll probably still make Eva after this is done. But this feels like Anno's end cap to like this is what I want to leave Evangelion with, and I feel like in my opinion it's a good note to end on. This is the real end of Evangelion. I think it made the journey worthwhile. I think he gave you a lot to discuss, while not supplanting the original, but only adding to the conversation that the original brought and its later good iterations. Definitely worth my time, and I think something that will extend the legacy and conversation around the series in very good ways.
That's a good way of putting it, that I think it was already sort of anime royalty or whatever, however you want to, anime legend. But I do think that it's such a nice way to kind of honor itself. And I do think that I know, I mean, I have friends, we both have friends, or we both know people that like Eva is like this incredibly personal series to them, and it is deeply like embedded in their souls, and it's really, really important to them. And so like I have never really counted myself like on that level of fan of the series, but I feel like these movies, and in particular this final film, has made me appreciate the series on like a new level and maybe appreciate it even more than I like initially ever did. I certainly think that the rebuild movies have added to this to its story, and like I just think it has sort of changed my perception a little bit of it. So I would have definitely recommend, watching the original TV series and then watching these movies. I say skip the other movies, but watch a Kam Susar Todd music video, then you can just like move along. But I can understand why you might say to watch them, but I couldn't put myself through that again. I think I obviously would have a very different feeling if I didn't enjoy the movies, but yeah, I feel like a lot more emotional about my journey with Ava than I thought that I would here at the end of it. So something about that makes me feel really good about these movies.
I will say, because I feel like it's worth bringing up, it is a little, in my opinion, easy to accuse this movie, not falsely, of being a little self-indulgent. But, I mean, one, at this point, that'd be Anno. If you don't know, like, unless you've just, like, never seen anything he's done before, and you're like, well, I've heard so much about these Evangelion rebuild movies, I guess I'll start here. And if anybody knows me well enough, like certain artists being self-indulgent, I like give a free pass to. So it'd be very weird for me to start now like criticizing them for that. But I do feel like there is a certain person that like the minute they see that, they will like head in the opposite direction. But I don't feel it ruins the movie, I just feel it is worth noting. Because like especially if you know certain things about Anno, you begin to immediately see it and cannot unsee it.
Well, then I think that's perfect timing to go into our spoiler section. So again, spoiler warning, spoiler warning, spoiler warning. And you don't even there's nothing else to hear past this point except like a little wrap up of the episode. So like if you haven't watched the movies yet, this is your final warning.
So let me go into my theory then. So yeah, I mean, like, so like throughout this last movie, Asuka is like totally ripping into Shinji for most of the movie, but then like there are all these moments of like secret like support and like her classic tsundere archetype, but with like extra vitriol, even more than usual. And I mean, it kind of does feel like Anno commenting on like just the fandom that like hated three and like was like hating him the whole time, but then being like, but boy, I really hope to see the fourth movie. And it's like, you fuckers, why are you tearing me down the whole time? But then like still looking forward to like enjoying slash tearing down my fourth movie. Fuck y'all, y'all. It just felt like, in many ways, like Asuka to me, like just immediately jumped out when you were talking of being like the surrogate for like the toxic part of the Ava fandom that like ripped into him yet still followed him at the same time.
That's an interesting interpretation because I do think that is an interpretation. I don't think we have any, like, I think we can interpret it different, different people will interpret it differently. So that's an interesting look at it. Like, I actually thought Asuka was really interesting in this movie. And Asuka's always a character that I have a little trouble with. I really like appreciated how much by the end of this movie, like she had grown up because like she had to, like she, you know, because Shinji was like in the like stasis and everybody else had to like exist and fight this endless war, basically. Like she has changed into a different person, and like I really liked that she isn't the same person that she was, and like you know she can honestly say like, oh, I might have had feelings for you at one time, but like that was in the past, and like I have lived a whole life now, like I am not the same person. So like I really kind of like I thought that that was really great, and sort of her and everyone else having to deal with like, right, classic Evangelion is that people don't know how to communicate with each other. But like the real complication is that like Shinji is both the hero and the villain, coming out of that third movie. Like, because it's like, oh, well, we all wouldn't be alive if not for you, but also like all of these other people like wouldn't be dead. So it's like this really precarious situation for so many of the characters in the show. And like Shinji's like not been there to like ex there have been going through like years of grief, and like I don't know, like it's just interesting like how, and Asuka is a part of that, like a part of like who's been going through this for like such a long time, and Shinji has been like gone.
Yeah, it did make me, just that line alone made me think about what you said about, like, if you could, like, see into an alternate timeline where you see the Eva movie that's made directly after Eva 4, makes me wonder how much also is a commentary of, what do you call it? Almost like, here's this long delay where everybody has had all these arguments and like discussions over Shinji slash Hideki Anno's decisions in three. And now here comes this movie fresh. Like, basically, it has had like no time in ways has passed for it, but the world has had all these discussions while it's been on pause.
Because, yeah, because at the beginning of the third movie is when there's like the skip, right? Like at the beginning of the third movie is like the 10 year, is it 10 years? I don't remember how many years it is. A lot of years when Shinji like awakens. So yeah, it's almost like that 10 years, but now in this movie, like because there's literally so many years between movie three and four. That's interesting, Al. Like that's a really interesting way to try to like, now it would be like it, yeah, to go back and sort of analyze that. The thing I wanted to say most about as far as spoilers go for this movie is how incredible it was to see Shinji confront Gendo, because that never happens. Like that has never happened. At least in the you know the canonical Eva stuff. So like I think that's something that we've all like really needed, and not just as the audience, but like Shinji needed it too. And I really appreciated that he confronts Gendo without apologizing, forgiving him, or absolving him of the things that he has decided to do. And then also the way in which we learn sort of why and how Gendo made these decisions, and like how he really, you know, neglected Shinji in a really specific way of being afraid to make a connection. And so like that, like it just felt like all the pieces really came together in that relationship. So I just was like so felt so satisfied with how all of that came out.
If Hideki Anno's dad is still alive, like watching this movie, if he did, must be like, man, son, is this something? Is this like a plea for us to talk? Because that's the first thing I could think. Because yeah, it's very clear that Anno's channeling, at least to some degree, something about his dad through these movies. I mean, I think that was a parrot from the original TV series, but it is unavoidable in this last movie.
I mean, it's hard to know, right? Because there's a lot of bad anime dads, as people like to discuss.
People have made like top 10 lists, and it's like, of the many anime dads, these are the 10 I think are the worst out of the sea of them. But I mean, I feel like whatever bad anime dads come up, usually get those on that list.
I mean, he does cause impacts in order to like remake humanity. I mean, yeah, like it's top tier for sure. So what did you want to talk about shipping wars wise?
The fact that he basically ends up with Mari at the end. And like, so basically it was like, oh, you were an Asuka shipper? Boom, dead. Rei shipper? Boom, dead. Misato shipper? Boom, dead. Kaoru shipper? Boom, dead. They exist, Kate. Misato Shinji shippers exist.
Go away.
Look, Kate,
Go
they're
away.
dead now.
Oh, good. Karu is obviously the right answer if there had to be an answer, but it's fine. Like, I feel like in certain sense, well, it couldn't be Rei because like Rei's basically, his mom. That would be, or it's not like she is hit her, but it's like this maternal, there's a maternal sort of aspect to that. And then Asuka, like, she doesn't want to be with you, man. She's moved on or whatever. Like, Mari is, if there needed to be like a romantic ending, like, I think it's fine. Like, I don't think there needed to be one, but like, sure. But I do think that she as a character, I think. I feel like it kind of makes sense to me just because she's like, it's almost like she's the person with the outside perspective. Like, she's like, I haven't had to, like, I don't, I'm not carrying all this emotional baggage, like, about you. And so, like, she could be, like, the outside perspective. Like, she's so mysterious, too. Like, and I mean, it could be Karu, but I guess like I did think it was weird that we saw Asuka and Karu at the end because I was like, aren't they just like, I mean, Karu especially is like, aren't you just some sort of like eternal being? Like, what are you doing? But I guess when Shinji remade the world, like maybe he gave them, like the ability to like exist. I mean, I did really like the remaking of the world and saying like no more mutants. I mean, no more Evangelions changing. Like, I kind of was wondering, this is, wait, sorry, I was going to talk about something else. Shipping. Go ahead, Al.
No, I just thought it was interesting. And also, I like when we were discussing it with a bunch of people after watching it, that like, I agree with the theory that like, oh, Mari is just your wife at this point. And it's like, there is a popular, and I think I've seen other people state it, that what do you call it? What do you call it? Oh, people are like, oh, Mari is the stand-in for Mayako Anno. I mean, the fact that like they even had those Mayako Anno books in the movie. Shinji, the Hideki Anno, what do you call it? Stand-in gets together with Mari, the Miyako-on who's standing. And there's like a whole bunch of like, her being a stabilizing, like him mentioning that her being a stabilizing thing in his life, and this movie ending with like Shinji in a much more stable place after going through all of this and encountering Mari and all these other things. Like, there's stuff to be read into that. But yeah, no, there was some salty shippers, Kate. Some very, very salty shippers.
I guess I don't want to tell anybody how they should feel, but I think similarly to like some of the like the plot is more about theme than like like dotting every I and crossing every T. Like I feel like similarly like I don't think that matters too much. Like
I will say that I was also amused by the number of people who just ate up the shipper tears and like being just annoyed by like being in the background of Ava shipping wars for 20 years, just like ate up the tears like candy, like you being upset, it's like the sweetest wine I could ever taste. The like secondhand shot of Freud was pretty intense.
will it put the shipping wars to bed forever?
No, that just what do you call it? It just makes certain people bitter soldiers as opposed to angry soldiers. Like someone who's more deep into fan fiction could probably give you more accurate, but if I had to guess, I'd say at least a third of fan fiction stems from people being bitter about how things turned out, and thereby have to write how it should have ended.
So the one thing I wanted to, I guess, talk about or interpret or whatever is that, when we saw, we kind of sort of suspected from previous movies that like this had happened before. Like this wasn't just retelling the original story that like, oh no, this is like happening again and like that this has happened multiple times. It's happened over and over and over. And so like we get sort of con we get confirmation of that in this movie. And I was thinking about like I think that's also kind of what I was saying earlier was like, oh, could we have had this Shinji and this ending without all the other ones? Because also, now that we know that like it has happened, dozens or more times, over that this story has happened, like I was kind of also thinking about it like thematically, like oh, could we have not gotten here without all those other experiences? And I was also kind of wondering about, like what was causing it to happen over and over again, and I was the way I was sort of kind of viewing it a little bit was Shinji kept well, we obviously we know that like Shinji had a hard time making decisions and like that would cause like a cascading effect, but I was thinking like, oh, was it like Shinji in other versions like kept wanting to redo it, like he did he ke keep wanting to like fix it and like but like ultimately the answer was like to not let it like it's like no more Evangelions, like there was just it doesn't it never happens because we never get to this point. Like I don't know, I just was like thinking a lot about like how Shinji was able to arrive here, and just I don't think there's any ant like a whole like one answer to that, but I just really liked that sometimes you are the sum of your experiences, and like sometimes I don't think that necessarily the series was like romanticizing trauma in any way, but that like the past informs the future, and like you can use it in different ways, maybe.
It's interesting. Because I feel if you just want a baseline counter, have you seen the ending to the Evangelion manga? So it, in many ways, has a very similar ending where the Instrumentality Project happens and basically it ends with Shinji like having a world where there's no Evangelions and everybody's just, going to school and being cool. So, like, kind of the easy deflection of what you said is, well, actually, it's mostly just a new version of the manga. But I feel that's kind of reductive because, Anno does. I mean, I'm sure that he at least knows of that ending, but I do feel there's more to. There are enough differences that it is not just a copy pasta of the official manga ending. And so, but I do feel like the manga ending like that does make it a little unclear of what the answer to that is, but I don't feel it definitively says either way. Also, since it is Evangelion, I felt like I should get that out of the way so we don't get like a dozen comments just saying, well, actually. But it is like, it's still one step down from, who Karu is supposedly based on, Ikahara levels of, and interpret at your will. But I do feel like it does leave itself open to at least several dozen different interpretations without even breaking a sweat. So I feel like if other people are like, actually, I think that this represented that, and that represented this, and the whole message is that, I feel like it's deliberately made that that's possible and, in fact, encouraged. If anything, I'm interested in the Discord to see what other people's thoughts on or interpretations of Thrice Upon a Time.
Oh yes, all I mean even the title leaves itself open to interpretation. Yeah, it's an interesting way of putting it out that like it's not as like Ikuhara in the like I have my feelings about it, but I'm not going to tell you what they are. So you like you just view this the way that you want to view this. Whereas like Anno I think has been pretty like he's pretty vocal about like here's what I was doing and like I mean not on everything but like you can there's lots of interviews there's a whole documentary about the making of these this last movie there's like information about like what he was going for and whether or not you agree with that or like whether or not you think that's successful or if that's how you would interpret it etc. is like that's all up to you but like I do feel like you're right. It's not, but there's still like maybe baseline, like this is how it might be interpreted. I don't feel like I have super analyzed the series in my own way, mostly because like there are again endless amounts of people who are already doing that. But these movies did kind of make me want to go back and like, what do I think? Who am I? Especially in like the original TV series, so
And go back and read Shinji Reijin Project. I gotcha.
right, priority number one. So thanks everybody for listening. Again, would love to hear your own interpretations. I might share a couple of articles for other people's interpretations that I've really enjoyed reading. I'll share those in the Discord. And yeah, it's just very shocking to say like goodbye to Evangelion, and thanks so much. And I'm really proud of you, Evangelion.
Although I'll be less proud, what do you call it? Like 10 to 15 years from now, when they have like Super Evangelion Remake by like some other dude.
We will always have Anno. That wraps up another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast, and we will be back again next month.